So this kind of final one, I want to hit on because of the nature of the time we are in, and the issues that we don't understand when it comes to a place like Portland right now, and how much of what we're experiencing in our country, in our culture, in the world, but specifically in our city, how much of this is connected to a spiritual reality. And, you know, there were a couple books that I read. I'd recommend both of them. I think they were really good. They're both essentially novel. One's a novella and the other one's a novel. And the first one is a book called The Tale of the Antichrist, written by a Russian author named Soloviev. And Soloviev is S-O-L-O-V-I-E-V. And he was a Russian Orthodox kind of mystic. He was Russian Orthodox. I wouldn't say he was always Orthodox, but he was a fascinating thinker. And on this particular piece, I found him unbelievably compelling. It's a short little parable around the rise of the Antichrist. And here's the thing about Soloviev. He was the main influence on Dostoevsky. So both Dostoevsky and Tolstoy saw Soloviev speak in St. Petersburg, and they were both deeply impacted by his talks. He did these talks on the meaning of love. But what's fascinating about Soloviev is that he viewed Tolstoy as the prototype of the Antichrist. So he did not like Tolstoy. and Dostoevsky sort of understood the essence of what Soloviev was getting at. And I would say that Dostoevsky used Soloviev's kind of theological grid to give us what is probably the greatest like piece of literary work in the history of literature, which is, and I'm actually not a Dostoevsky fan. I hate his prose, but I love his thoughts. I love his ideas. But I will say the chapter of the Grand Inquisitor and the dialogue between Ivan and Alyosha is probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, piece of literary work I've ever seen, because it explores so many unbelievably deep and important questions around human suffering and divine intervention and purpose, and what does it mean to be in the shadow of God's hand, and why do people not believe, and what are the mechanisms that are driving it. So it's like it's this perfect blend of like really wonderful theology mixed with really, really profound understanding of psychology for that one thing. So he was like the first legitimate psychologist to have his unbelievable lead on just human behavior. What I just like about him see as a novelist, as well, personally, being a history toward, I think we're already seeing it, that in the last days, the love of many will grow cold. There will be a hardening of hearts. There will be an increased pride. And the church will look as if it's about to lose. That's the picture. As far as rapture and those kinds of things, I don't care if someone believes it. I just don't see the biblical kind of like double predestination or limited atonement. I just don't see the biblical support for it. So what I think is that the church, I don't think that, you know, the argument is that there can't be a tribulation and God's wrath poured out on the world. And us experience that wrath because we're no longer objects of wrath because we're God's children. I think that that's an oversimplification of like what that even means. And I think what we need to understand is that the church has never been spared from suffering in church history. Why do we think it's going to be now? And God's wrath has always been at play in the world, which is, and therefore he gave them over to do those things which are unfitting. We don't even need demons to destroy the world. My argument is that the demonic realm is at play to influence and to persuade and motivate movements away from God. And I think the demonic realm's greatest work is actually in the church, and it is anything that can diminish the deity of Jesus, and it'll be the diminishment of Jesus for the sake of really good things. Racial reconciliation, true tolerance and acceptance of all people. You know, the you know, all paths lead to God. It's the softening of what come across to a from a non-believing perspective as the rigidity of a system that is actually oppressive, when in actuality it's the world that's oppressive, and the systems that the world is producing is creating an ever deepening oppression. And it's because there is a demonic influence under it. And what Scripture is very clear is that the entire sway is under the rule of the wicked one. You know, in the 80s and, you know, 70s and 80s, you know, we act like the only place that Satan was working was in, like, in bands like Led Zeppelin. And it's like, I don't even think he's interested in Led Zeppelin. I think that where Satan is interested is anywhere where he can produce worship that is other than worship of Jesus. So Satan was working just as powerfully amongst our sporting teams that, you know, people worship, like all over the nation, our athletes, our politicians, our musicians. Satan is interested. He doesn't care if he is worshiped or he is not worshipped. As long as we're not worshiping Jesus, he's winning. That's the kingdom of darkness at play. So the demonic realm is a much more insidious thing than the red herring that you find in a movie like The Exorcist. By the way, someone was asking me, like, I freaking love horror films. I just want you guys to know, like, I really, really like horror films. I don't like slasher films. I don't like serial killer films. I like movies about devils. And the reason is because I like anything that provokes the idea that if there is supernatural evil, there must be supernatural good. So people have asked me all the time, like, how can you watch a movie like The Witch that came out? I'm like, The Witch is incredible, because The Witch actually asks the question, is there evil at play behind that takes advantage of our already sinful nature? And I love it. It's a religious family that have locked the front door to the devil, but their own infighting and arrogance and pride has left the back door open, and Satan wreaks havoc on the family. It's amazing. You should all watch it tonight. It's Halloween. It'll be so fun. I promise you, it'll scare the hell out of you. And that's what I want. I want people to literally have the hell scared out of them. I'm watching right now a TV show that's a fascinating show. I know Nick's a fan of it, called Midnight Mass. And that's another one where it's like the deception of a Catholic priest who thinks he's been approached by an angel, when in actuality he has surrendered himself to a demon, and it brings him youthfulness, so it turns him back into what he was when he was a young priest, and he brings the demon back to an island, a coastal town off of Maine, where he's now performing miracles. Girls that's paralyzed walks, and it's like, but what they don't realize is that the communion there he's giving them is actually connected to the blood that he received from this demon. Like, it's insane. But the picture that I think it paints is actually incredibly powerful, which is the idea of, like, the evil within the church, because of our legalism, because of our blindness to grace, the rigidity in which it's an us against them mentality, our fear of people that we don't understand, when in actuality we're the monsters often creating pain in people's lives. These are the things that I think that the church has to understand in order for us to be the effective witness that God has called us, because we do not have to surrender our orthodoxy to be kind. That's, like, one thing that I have learned. Like, you don't have to, like, agree with someone that holds to a view of sexuality that is not biblical to be a kind person. Like, you can be absolutely great. We're called to not judge those outside of the church, because we don't need to. Like, what we're called to do is lift up Jesus and be witnesses. But that's where I think Satan gets his incredible work on that. So anyway, the other book that I would just say is Robert Benson, written in 1902 before Brave New World, called Lord of the Worlds. And it's also a story about the rise of the Antichrist. It's Catholic. Benson's very Catholic. So the only Christians that are left are just a small group of Catholics, of course, in his picture of the end of the world. But it's a powerful picture once again, that it's the idea that someone arises that gives the world everything it's longing for, which is peace. And I have said again and again that I think most Christians today, because of our biblical illiteracy, because of our lack of understanding of the gospel, because of our tendency toward law and not gospel, because of our desire for justice more than for grace, that we would surrender Jesus just like Tolstoy if it meant bringing world peace. And that is what the Antichrist is going to bring. That's at least in my very plain and literal reading of a figurehead rising up. And if it's not a figurehead, I think that spirit, at the least, is going to produce that. Well, no matter how we cut the spiritual landscape, what we do know is that the demonic realm is going to be increasingly active and more fully engaged against the people of God. And the dominions of darkness will almost seem like it will overcome everything before Jesus returns. So if you want to have a biblical worldview, you have to understand that we do not get the world better before Jesus gets back. That the restoration theology has no place in the New Testament. It doesn't mean that we aren't to be engaged in injustice. It doesn't mean that we aren't to be good citizens. It just means that all we are is a restrainer, and I think we saw this fully when the church stopped meeting, is that we restrain the world from being as evil as it could be, but we are not going to make it perfect before Jesus comes. That's his job. So here's the passage. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord, Ephesians 6, 10 through 13, and in the power of his might, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. I just want you to notice that how many categories he spells out there. It's a really fascinating thing. So you have principalities, you have powers, you have rulers of the darkness of this age, you have spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. I think that there are lots of good resources on spiritual warfare. There is a lot of sensational and spectacular things. And I would say that when we think in terms of the demonic realm, it's easy for us to utilize our popular culture visions of like what the devil is like and what demons are. And I mean, there are so many like exorcist counterfeit films, you know, that have tried to emulate that. And it's like, it's meant to like be this terrifying thing. I want to just be really clear that the satanic realm is far more subtle, far more beautiful, but it's a corrupt beauty. I'll give you an example of this. Before I was a Christian, I was a pretty significant drug user. I would say the closest thing I experienced to church in my early 20s was a private dance club party on ecstasy. It was like a picture of like, oh, this is what it means to love people, because everybody was beautiful, everything felt right, people were having fun, it was safe, nobody's dying. But the thing that was underlying that made it so insidious is it was all driven by sensuality and external experiences. It was about touch, it was about feel, it was about sensory overload. So it's like, it's a counterfeit of the Holy Spirit. It's a counterfeit of agape love, because it wasn't agape, it was a room full of eros. And it was one of those things where the eros is so vibrant that there is a blurring of lines over like what is acceptable behavior, but it was driven by this false belief that we are experiencing love. This is a meaningful experience. I think that that's the church of Satan. It's not the dark cave where there's a child being sacrificed. It's a group of beautiful young people in an urban environment in and dancing to the best music ever and taking drugs that makes everyone hot. But all it ends up doing is just creating this promiscuity, this false sense of reality. It's damaging to the body. It hurts the brain. It's like, these are the things that we do in our society to create church. That's why the bar is a picture of real church for a lot of people. My father's community, his place where he finds Jesus, if you will, at least in the past when he was healthy enough, was sitting at the bar where the priest is the bartender. He's confessing his brokenness, you know, other people that are broken. And honestly, sometimes at the bar, you get more honesty than you get in a pew. And I think that this is the kind of thing, it's like but Satan knows that. And so what Satan is masterful at, these principalities, these powers, is that they create, they play on the deep right longing of the heart for ritual, for community, for purpose. And we are so desperate for those things, which are good things, and God has wired us to want those things. But we look for everything to fill it except for God. And Satan's goal is to keep us with so many distractions, so many possibilities for satisfying those needs. We want to worship. If aliens came to planet Earth and asked us and they were going to look for where people worship, they would not come to a church. They would go to our coliseums where our sporting teams play. That's where they're going to go. And we don't even understand that this is the realm of the demonic. It's not the dark, scary, you know, man with horns, you know, hiding in the shadows. Although that ugliness and that terror is there, but that's a red herring. The reality is it's the subtle ways in which the enemy tells you every time you're tempted to sin, it's not that big of a deal, just do it. God will forgive you. And then you do it, and then it's the voice of condemnation that comes from outside of you that says, God will never forgive you for that. How could you do that? And it's those kinds of realities. This is the interplay where there are spiritual powers. Now, the question that people ask is like, what is it meant by spiritual powers and principalities? Well, I think there are clues that there are demonic strongholds. And I think it just has to do with what does a culture allow. So as you think about it, we can't escape a climate. If you were to go from Portland to Texas, there's a climate in Portland that is driven by more fear than other places in the U.S. right now. And we probably have less reason to be fearful in Portland over COVID, but we are trained to believe that this is, you know, enemy number one, and we're going to do it right. And there's an attitude, there's a spirit of fear. There's a, you know, in some places, like that spirit of like hyper right politics, kind of, you know, we have the opposite spirit that believes that we're smarter than all those dumb people that do that over there. That's the kind of demonic realm of like whatever can be done to create the belief that you're on the right team. I think that's where there can be spiritual strongholds in places where there's almost a shared lie that's believed. And I look at it in Daniel when it says that when the archangel shows up to Daniel and says that he was held up as he was battling the prince of Persia. It's like clearly he's not battling a physical king, but that there's a spiritual dominion or a spiritual power spiritual influence over that kingdom. I think that is a reality. And I've traveled enough places in the world where you can feel it in certain places. You know, there are certain places where you're like, that is some dark stuff. Like there's just like an oppressiveness where, you know, I felt it in communism, in atheistic countries. They have like some of the weirdest like spiritual overtones like I've ever felt, because it's a whole nation that's been convinced to believe that there is no God. What a victory. What a demonic victory that is. And so I think that these are the kinds of things that we need to understand. And this is why Paul says, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against these principalities, powers, against rulers of the darkness of the age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor. By the way, heavenly places is just God's space versus material space, and they are interwoven. That's why I love Charles Williams and the Inklings. his seven supernatural thrillers are the most masterful picture of the interaction between the unseen world and the seen world, which is why I love him so much. It says, therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand. So principle number one, I'm gonna open up for questions, just a couple principles. Life is a battle. It's a spiritual battle. And if you're not in a battle, then you're not a threat, which then says something about your Christianity. The times where I have experienced the most spiritual warfare is in the times when I'm being the most obedient to Jesus, and when I'm being the most committed preaching the gospel. The early days of Door of Hope, I mean, I was tormented. We would have dreams. I even was a little suspect of spiritual warfare until, I had several experiences with demon possession. I've only done two exorcisms, legitimate exorcisms that, ended in victory. One of them was with Tim Mack, which changed his entire theological grade. Actually, what led him to do the series and the project on the spiritual dominions with the kingdom express him, and I had with the young woman at Door of Hope. At the night I taught this passage, Sunday night, Door of Hope, I had called this young woman, who was only talking to you, she talked to them about mine, and with him, she did this, and they wanted to dismantle the devil's ability to and so I think that's what we need to get into one piece of the next couple. This is the end of the stream. I don't